You know, when we come in today, the topic of conversation is the Feast of Tabernacles, the upcoming Holy Days. We saw that in the sermonette video. That's what we're all looking forward to and we're all talking about. As I was driving home, I listen to a sports talk show occasionally when I'm driving home. And what this was doing on a sports talk show, I have no idea. But it does have some value in the fact that they talked about an end of the world scenario that's being predicted. Most of you know that on the Feast of Tabernacles, the first day is the fourth blood moon. We've probably heard some of that. And as I was driving home listening to a sports talk show, they said, oh, breaking news, the end of the world is upon us. The fourth blood moon. And they actually said, on the first day of the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles, which was, that got my attention. So I went and looked it up. I did a Google search like we all can do. And I got this article here because this was a Russian prophet who's predicting this. It says the Blood Moon prophecy says the end is near on September 28th, which coincides with the last of the four Blood Moons. The claim appears to have its origins with a self-proclaimed prophet from Russia who he says he wrote to NASA warning of the strike after receiving a message from God. Now, what strike? What he's predicting is that an asteroid will hit Puerto Rico. And we'll be in St. Kitts, so we're toast. We're gone right away. You'll have to suffer depending on where you live or where you're going to the feast. He claims that he saw this in a vision of this asteroid entering airspace over Puerto Rico, striking, triggering a magnitude 12 earthquake. Now, there are six so-called close approaches of near Earth within a cosmic fraction of the planet within the 7 days timescale. There actually is, but NASA insists the doom mongers are wrong. Although one rock, which is called the 2012 TT5, it will be tracked to ensure it doesn't deviate from its projected orbit, NASA scientists say that we need not be worried. NASA knows of no asteroid or comet currently on a collision course with Earth. And as a matter of fact, they say no large object is likely to strike Earth at any time in the next several hundred years. But the article goes on to say, you never know. Because in 2013, you probably remember this in the news, Russia was wondering what happened when a 20-meter-long meteor came from nowhere and exploded above Russia, injuring 1,500 people, damaging around 7,000 buildings. So it's kind of interesting that this comes up on the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, you know, that fourth blood moon. It leads right into the sermon that I'm going to give today, is why I read this, because are we ready? You know, we're coming up to these last four holy days, and trumpets signifies that return of Christ. And the Feast of Tabernacles, we know what that signifies, the kingdom of God. So are we ready? Are we ready for that? I want to begin by turning over to Matthew 24. And I'd like to look at a couple of parables that Jesus gave us, warning the people of his day, talking to them about being ready. And let's look at verse 45. The parable really begins there and goes on into Matthew 25. But in verse 45, it says, "Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season?" And don't we all want to be considered wise? We all do. Everyone sitting here wants to be considered wise. And what's the answer to that question? Well, the next verse says, "Blessed is the servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing." So doing. So doing what? Well, taking care of things while the owner, the master, is away. You know, if you put someone in charge of your house and you go away, you want things to be taken care of. You know, we need to be wise in that action, taking care of things while he's away, the same way that you would want somebody to take care of your house. We need to take care of things both physically and spiritually while he is away now. Verse 47, "Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods." And then in verse 48, we see the beginning of an if-then statement. Now, back in the days when I did a little computer programming in the basic language, way old language, they had these if-then statements in the programming language. If this equals that, then go to this line of programming or execute this function. I always think of that when I see these if-then statements in the Bible. But what it means is, if this condition applies, then this is what's going to happen. So verse 48. "If that evil servant says in his heart, 'My master delays his coming,' then what?" You know, I saw a new commercial a couple of days ago, and it reminded me of this right here. If the evil servant says, "My master delays his coming," the owners of this dog are going to go out to dinner. And they say, "Now you be a good boy." And he sits there and he watches them drive away. He barks a couple of times. All of his dog friends come into the house. They tear things up. It's a story about I think it's a commercial about laminate flooring or something. But they tear everything up, and then one dog sees him driving back and they clean everything up, and he sits there so pretty when they walk in. Kind of reminds me of that. But, you know, my master delays his coming. He's not coming back for a while. We can relax. We can eat and drink and be merry. Let our guard down. Act foolishly. Verse 49, "He begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him, in an hour that he's not aware of, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. And there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So that you're going to get caught. They're going to come back home when you're not expecting it. Find the house a mess, or just totally messed up. And in chapter 25, and in verse 1, is the second part of that if-then statement. So, if you're not diligent, then, verse 1, "The kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom." So, we're getting into the parable of the 10 virgins, a very familiar parable. And of course, this parable represents Christians. It represents us waiting for the return of Christ. We'll see that as we go along. But in verse 2 it says, "Five of them are foolish and five of them are wise." It says that in verse 2. I hope I'm one of the wise ones. And you probably hope that you're one of the wise ones too. But every one of us thinks that we're in that column. Every one of us. Only 50% of us are there. Let's make sure that we're one of the wise. But how were they foolish? Let's look in verse 3. Those who were foolish took their lamps, and they took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. You know, they were foolish because they were not prepared. They were short-sighted. They didn't think they needed extra supplies. They didn't really see the big picture. They didn't know what was going on. And we understand that oil here can represent God's Spirit. Maybe we can relate to it that way. And it's not like they didn't have time to prepare, because they had the same amount of time as the five wise ones. They had the same amount of time. How do we spend our time? Are we foolish with our time? Then in verse 5, while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. All of them. The ones who did their work and were wise and maybe deserved a rest, but the other ones who were lazy shouldn't have rested. And they got caught off guard. They were a bit lazy. They were definitely short-sighted. And they were foolish. They had plenty of time, because he's not coming back right now. We've got time. You know, these three attributes are seen a lot in the Bible together. Being foolish, being lazy, and being short-sighted. They seem to go hand in hand. Let's continue in verse 6. They got caught. And at midnight a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom comes. Go out to meet him." Midnight. Why midnight? Why is midnight talked about here? What do you think when somebody knocks on your door at midnight? That's not good. It's never good. Your neighbor's not coming over to borrow a cup of sugar. Not at midnight. It's always bad news, because nobody sane is going to bother you at midnight unless something's wrong. But we're told to expect the unexpected here. Turn back one page in my Bible anyway. Matthew 24 in verse 36. It says, "But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating, they were drinking, marrying, given in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark. And they did not know until the flood came and took them all away. So also will be the coming of the Son of Man." So many were caught off guard. Do you remember the story? They're making fun of Noah. What are you building a ship in the middle of here for? There's no water around. And they got caught off guard. And many will be caught off guard today. Verse 44 concludes this thought by saying, "Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you don't expect." And midnight is definitely an hour you wouldn't expect. Go back over to Matthew 25. Okay, so the bridegroom comes, and in verse 7, "Then all those virgins rose, trimmed their wick, and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. They didn't prepare. They weren't ready. And the wise answered and said, no, at least there should not be enough for us and for you, but rather go to those who sell and buy for yourself. They were caught unprepared. And it's not like they didn't have the money, because you see here, they went off to buy. And in verse 10, they went out to buy and the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterwards, the other virgins came in also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. And he answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I don't know you. Watch therefore, verse 13 says, for you know neither the day or the hour which the Son of Man is coming. You know, their chance was lost. That's very sad. And we see what happens when they try to get in. They were foolish. They were lazy. And they were short-sighted. And what's that mean to us? You know, this is a parable for us today. We can relate that to Christians being foolish and lazy and short-sighted. We have to have enough of that oil so that we endure to the end. It's a lesson for us. Turn over to Proverbs 29. Proverbs 29 and verse 18. It says, where there's no vision, the people perish. But he that keeps the law, happy is he. No vision. Short-sightedness. Not looking ahead. Not preparing for the future. Not understanding the big picture. You know, there's another parable over in Luke, if you turn over to Luke, and it talks about someone who is very short-sighted. Turn over to Luke 15, another very familiar parable that we talk about quite a bit in the church. Luke 15, and in verse 11, there's the parable of the prodigal son, commonly called that. We see in verse 12 that the younger of the two brothers, they just can't wait for their inheritance. And he does something very foolish, very short-sighted. I want to read these verses from the New Living Translation. Beginning in verse 12, the younger son told his father, I want to share your estate now before you die. You know that? That's a lot of gumption. How would you like your son to come up and say, give me my inheritance before you die? You know, my wife was talking to one of our sons. He's looking for a house, our middle son, and he's getting discouraged. He can't find anything within his price range. He's looking for about 5 acres, you know, wants a little land. And he was talking, you have to understand our sense of humor in our family. But he said to my wife, I'm just going to stay here and I'll take over things when you die. And the older son overheard that and said, oh, no, you're not. You're going to split that three ways. You're going to have to pay. And Sharon says, I'm standing right here. So, you know, that's I thought of that when I read this scripture for the sermon. But you walk up to your parent, your father, and you say, I want my inheritance now. And amazingly, the second half of this verse, so the father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. So he agreed. And he divided that wealth, gave one to this son. And in verse 13, a few days later, his younger son packed all his belongings and moved to a distant land. And there he wasted all his money in wild living. Not very wise. And very short-sighted. Verse 14 continues and says, about the time his money ran out, bad timing, a great famine swept over the land and he began to starve. So he's very foolish, very short-sighted, squandered his inheritance. Verse 15, he persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into the field to feed the pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him. But no one gave him anything. Kind of interesting statement. And in verse 17, when he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, at home even the hired servants have food enough to spare, and I'm here dying of hunger. I'll go home to my father and say, Father, I've sinned against both heaven and you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Take me on as a hired servant. And you know what happens? He comes back home and he says these things, and his father greets him, takes him in, and throws a big party. And the other brother hears this commotion and talks to another servant and, hey, what's going on? Well, your brother's come back. And he was upset. He wouldn't even come in the house, if you read the story. His father had to go out and talk to him. And here's what he said in verse 31. His father said to him, look, dear son, you've stayed with me, and everything that I have is yours. That's a key phrase. You know that other brother, he didn't get anything else. He had his inheritance. He had to live with those consequences. He had to live with that. He didn't get a second inheritance. So he was foolish. Very foolish. You know, I've known some people in the church over the years that I've considered short-sighted and somewhat foolish about physical things that I just didn't agree with. You know, I've said some of these things in sermonettes over the years, but I've known some people who wouldn't go to the dentist because they thought their teeth would be fixed in the kingdom of God. And I thought, wow, I wonder what that person looks like now if he didn't go to the dentist. Kind of interesting. I remember one couple back in Cincinnati, they didn't want to have children until the place of safety. That was 30 years ago. I think they finally did have some children. I knew a family back in Cincinnati again that this gentleman was probably about, I'd say 50 or so at the time, but he decided that he was never going to see retirement because Christ was going to return. And, you know, the day and hour, we don't know. But he cashed in his 401k plan and bought a bass boat, which I went out on several times. But, you know, he was 40 or 50 years old and he cashed in his 401k plan. I thought that was pretty foolish. You know, I remember thinking, wow, man, I really don't know about that decision. You know, today he's probably over 70 years old, and I hope he recovered from that bad decision. I hope he did. You know, I've been working since I graduated from college, contributing 401k plan, a private IRA, preparing for the future. And you know, the way that I figure it is, if Christ comes and I don't get to use that money, then so be it. That's fine with me. Or if we're called and we go to the place of safety and I have time to cash it out, I'll share it with all of you. But if Christ does not return, I just think it's very foolish and short-sighted not to have plans physically. Now I'm talking physically But we can relate that to the spiritual as well. Are you prepared now or later? Or perhaps not in your lifetime. We don't know when Christ is going to return. We just don't know. But I do think it's foolish not to prepare for whenever he will return. Turn over to Proverbs 6. Proverbs 6, I love the way the New Living Translation translates this, so I'll read it there, and you can follow along in your version. Proverbs 6 and in verse 6, it says, "Take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their ways, become wise. Though they have no prince or governor to rule and make them work, they labor hard all summer, gathering food for the winter." You know, a time when it wouldn't be plentiful, a time of need maybe. Verse 9, "But you, lazy bones, how long will you sleep? When will you wake up? A little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then poverty will pounce on you like a bandit. Scarcity will attack you like an armed robber." I just think it's wise to plan for the future, both physically and spiritually. It's kind of interesting, laziness and foolishness are in this scripture, just like the parable of the 10 virgins. You find that a lot together. While we're here in Proverbs, let's take a look at a couple other verses. Go over to Proverbs 10. Proverbs 10, verse 4. "Lazy men are soon poor. Hard workers get rich." Is it any wonder why there's so many poor in our country? "A wise youth makes hay while the sun shines. But what a shame it is to see a lad who sleeps away his hour of opportunity." Boy, do we see that in our country. So many with the entitlement mentality. You know, opportunities abound in this country. You can create your own business. You can do things on the internet. There's so many different ways, but we're so short-sighted. Look down in verse 26. Again, New Living Translation that I'm reading from. Verse 26 in the New Living Translation is actually kind of amusing. "A lazy fellow is a pain to his employers. Like smoke in their eyes or vinegar that sits their teeth on edge." You ever know somebody like that? I do. We had one guy where I work, and not very long ago, you could never find the guy. You know, I work at a very large plant site, and we're kind of independent contractors. We help our customers. We're all over the place. You know, our bosses don't know where we are a lot of the time. But you could never find this guy. You would call him, anything that came up, you could never find this guy. He got caught sleeping in his car, and they caught him for time card fraud, which you don't do. Very bad. And that's one of the things you can finally fire somebody, and he got fired. A pain to his employers. I know people like that. They don't stay employed very long. Chapter 12. And in verse 11. Hard work means prosperity. Only a fool idles away his time. Chapter 14, a couple pages over, verse 23. Work brings profit. Talk brings poverty. You ever run across those people? All talk. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And they never do anything. Proverbs 26. Couple pages over. And the way this is translated in the New Living Translation is absolutely hilarious. Proverbs 26. Someone full of excuses. Verse 13. The lazy man won't go out and work. There might be a lion outside. There might be a lion outside. There might be a water buffalo in my front yard, but I doubt it. There might be a lion outside. Verse 14. He sticks to his bed like a door to its hinges. Now that's pretty close. Verse 15. He's too tired even to lift his food from his dish to his mouth. Now that's tired. In verse 16, yet in his own opinion, he's smarter than seven wise men. Isn't that true? That is absolutely right on for so many people. There's so many of those, I can't read them in one sermon. Turn over to chapter 24. This is an interesting phenomenon that... I don't know, you probably have it here. You see, there's this house that you drive by and you see this. You see it in Tennessee, I'm sure you see it here. You're just cruising down the road and this house catches your eye. It's full of junk. Refrigerator on the front porch. You know which one I'm talking about. Talks about it here in the Scriptures. Verse 30. Chapter 24, verse 30. I went by the field of a lazy man and the vineyard of a man without understanding. And behold, it was all grown over with thorns. Nettles covered the face of it. The stone wall was breaking down. We've all seen that house. But I considered it well. I looked upon it and I received instruction. And interestingly enough, some of the same phraseology here, verse 33. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to lie down, and your poverty comes stalking, and you're once like an armed man. Chapter 12. This one, again, from the New Living Translation. I read it in several translations, but this is the funniest one. Chapter 12, verse 23. Smart people keep quiet about what they know, but stupid people advertise their ignorance. You ever have one of those people who you thought were really, really smart until they opened their mouth, and then you knew better? That's too funny. You know, there's another kind of foolishness that's talked about, and it's rampant in our country, around the world. Let's look at that in Psalm 53. Psalm 53 and verse 1. Only fools say in their heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. Their actions are evil. Not one of them does good. God looks down from heaven on the entire human race. He looks to see if anyone is truly wise, since we're talking about wisdom, foolishness, short-sightedness. How many does he find that are wise? Not very many. Romans 1, to continue that thought. Romans 1 and verse 19. They know the truth about God because he's made it obvious to them. For ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky. Through everything God's made, they can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature. So they have no excuse for not knowing God. You know, I was watching the Weather Channel several weeks ago now, and a show, they weren't showing just the weather. They'd show programs on the Weather Channel now. And there was a show on there called The Secrets of the Earth. And I started watching this show, and I saw the title of it was Goldilocks. You know the story of Goldilocks, three bears. Tries out stuff. But, you know, what Goldilocks chooses is something that's not too hot, not too cold, just right. Okay? So the story of this program is the Earth sets in the Goldilocks zone. That's how life can exist here. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. It's just right. You know, and they started explaining the heating and cooling cycles that occurs. You know, the global warming and cooling cycles. And I sat and listened to that. I was amazed. I guess I never really thought about it in depth before. But the way that it works is they explained in this program, and look it up. I recommend that program. It's called Goldilocks. The volcanoes and other carbon-producing, CO2-producing things on Earth spew out CO2, and that heats up the atmosphere. And so then you get on a upward trajectory where things are heating up. But plants love CO2, and they thrive. And you think of plants like these outside the window, grass, trees, but that's not it because, you know, the majority of the Earth is water. What really takes the CO2 out is the algae blooms. So the sea will bloom algae everywhere, pull that CO2 out, creating oxygen, and then it starts to cool the Earth. Now, this takes thousands and thousands and thousands of years to do. But you'll have a cycle that comes up, and then you'll have a cycle that goes down. Very interesting. And I sat there and I watched this and I thought, that is a marvelous creation. That was well thought out. Really well thought out. They brought up Jupiter. Jupiter's placement and its mass and its gravitational pull. Jupiter sucks in all the asteroids and comets so they don't hit the Earth. Just amazing. And I sat there and I thought, wow, God really worked that out. Of course, they went on to explain how evolution really worked that out after being in the Goldilocks zone for billions and billions of years. But they don't see God, like these scriptures say. They don't see God. When I saw it, before they started talking about evolution, I commented to Sharon, you got to come in and watch this. She was out in the kitchen. You got to come in and watch this. This is amazing how God worked this out. Because that's my mindset. But they don't see God like it says here. Verse 21. Yes, they knew God, but they wouldn't worship Him as God or even give Him thanks. And they began to think up foolish ideas of what God was like. As a result, their minds became dark and confused. Claiming to be wise, they instead became utter fools. And that's the way they are. And instead of worshiping the glorious, ever-living God, they worshiped idols made to look like mere people and birds, animals and reptiles. And God abandoned them to do whatever shameful things their heart desires. As a result, they did vile and degrading things with each other's bodies. They traded the truth about God for a lie. So they worshiped and served the things which God created instead of the Creator Himself, who's worthy of eternal praise. You know, the foolish, the lazy, and the short-sighted are among us, both here and out of here in the world. We need to remember the parables, the lessons about being foolish and lazy and short-sighted as we come up to the holy days that actually remind us of our future and what we have in store for us. The parable for those 10 virgins are for us today to think about, take into our minds, and remember to remain diligent in our walk. We don't know if an asteroid is going to hit the earth on the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, or you drop dead in the parking lot and it's over for you. Or if nothing happens in your lifetime, but you should be ready, like that parable shows, because He'll come at a time when you're not prepared, when you're not ready, when you think He won't come. But we want to hear Him say at the end of it all, "Well done, good and faithful servant." We don't want to hear, "I don't know you."